whenever you're ready.
All right, gentlemen. Oh, okay.
I guess we're ready now. Thanks, Lou.
Okay, now we're ready. Right, we're ready?
Yeah, we're ready. Just, yep.
We're ready? Ready. Are we ready?
Ready. Okay. Ready? You guys know that was the intro, right? Like, that's just going to be the intro now.
Perfect. The Awkward Creative Genius Podcast. Beautiful. Welcome back, gentlemen, to another episode here. A little a little awkward beginning, but I love it. So anyways, welcome to another episode of the Creative Genius Podcast with your gents here, Mr. Lou, Mr. Adam, and myself, Mr. Jim. So we have some interesting stuff to talk about today, kind of stuff that we talked about kind of in passing, but really haven't dove into yet. But first, we have some news and some follow-up. So it's only been a few days since we recorded, guys, and it's all because of you. It's entirely your fault. So I hope you're both enjoying your vacations while I get to not do vacation stuff and continue to do papers and work stuff.
Well, you still get a vacation because, like, now we're just getting this out of the way. So next week you don't have to worry about record. Well, actually, I lied. You do have to worry about recording next week.
Yeah. So thanks for going without me, guys. That was really, really sweet of you.
You got a week off.
You get a nice, like, you know, week where you don't have to do anything this weekend. You get your Saturday evening to yourself.
Take it up with HR.
All right, I will. Well, we need an HR rep first.
Hey, anyone out there wants to be our HR rep? Just email us.
I'll talk to Gerald about it.
Oh, Gerald would be the best HR person too. So, what's your problem? That doesn't sound like a problem to me. Okay, I guess not.
Well, Gerald says it's not a problem. So, I'm really passionate about this, and before I really go on one of my rants about it, I want to know how you guys feel about it. And that is EA Games being such a trash company and then continuing to do the bogus bullshit that they always do, which is microtransactions and not selling a completed product. But I have a lot to say about it, but I'd like to hear what you guys think.
Yeah, Lou, what do you think of EA Games, a gaming company for all the games that you play?
That you know so much about.
Yeah, I'm just going to get myself out of the way real quick. I have no clue what this is about, so y'all have fun with this.
All right, so EA Games, I'll just kind of give some backstory, you know, to see why Jim is so mad. So Star Wars Battlefront 2, mostly. I like how you put that in there. Basically, EA loves microtransactions. They love nickel and diming people after you just bought a $60 game to unlock more content or unlock more levels or whatever it is. So you never really get the full game for $60. It really costs you $60 plus microtransactions over the next, you know, 12 months to actually play the full game. And the problem is that, and I'll let Jim get into this too, is like they don't even let you play the full game without microtransactions. Like, it's not just a pay once and then, you know, get to play and enjoy the game. It's a pay once and then pay again and pay more and pay more and pay more. So they announced Battlefront 2 and it had a lot of microtransactions, tons of them. So naturally, the gaming community, as they should, complained about this and said, this isn't right. So EA is like, hey, you know what? Gamers are on Reddit. We'll go on Reddit and we'll defend ourselves. So they put their foot down and tried to defend themselves, saying, like, microtransactions, you know, increase the quality of the game and blah, blah, blah. And that was the most downvoted Reddit post in history. So that's the gist of what I know. And I know Jim is much more passionate about it than I am because I don't even own a console that can play Battlefront 2, so I have no dog in this fight, but I also don't agree with the way that they're running this company, and we talked about this when we talked about, you know, in-app purchases and things like that. Like, I don't like microtransactions. I don't like being nickel and dimed. I'd rather just pay once and get out of the way, but Jim, the floor is yours.
So I would like to preface this by saying it's not just EA who does microtransactions. This is a popular thing with a lot of gaming companies. Is, you know, Ubisoft does microtransactions, Bungie and EA are really the biggest ones that I find that do this. BioWare to a lesser extent I've noticed, but really not like the others. So the thing with EA is that just really wrestles my jimmies is they took on Star Wars Battlefront, right? And they were supposed to own it and really bring this wonderful game back to life, because the original Battlefront series that came out was phenomenal. You got the full game, you could unlock all the characters with a reasonable amount of gameplay. And, you know, when you bought the game, you bought the whole game, and it was great. But they made the most recent Battlefront, I think it was 2 years ago. And they gave like a full-fledged, full-on buying this game at $60, you know, and the deluxe version being $80, you literally get four maps. And then they give you this, they're like, oh, you get all these special weapons and all these cool things that no one else will get. And then for pre-ordering, right? So I did that. I was like, cool, I really like Star Wars, I'm into it. And I pre-ordered. And then what they did was, is 2 months while after the game was released, they gave everyone all of the stuff that I got for pre-ordering, and everyone got all the maps that I got for free, and it was like there was no point in me pre-ordering and spending the extra money. And that really, ooh, that just made me so mad. So mad. So then they, you know, they said that they recognized that was a problem and yada yada. So then they were going to try to make it right with Battlefront 2, which I did not pre-order this time, nor did I buy. Like, I am done buying EA games until they get their company straight. But as it turns out, if you do the math and if you look at how much time it actually takes to unlock all these characters, it'll take you like some crazy number, like 2,400 hours to unlock all the characters, to be able to earn all the credits to unlock all these characters, or over $2,000 to just pay it all with all the stupid microtransactions and all the dumb season pass bullshit. So really, your $60 game, if you want the full content of it, is either going to cost you $2,000 of your hours or $2,000 of your dollars. And it is absolutely insane. And I'm just super frustrated that these companies think that they can just take advantage of the gaming community like this and just think that that's going to be an okay thing to do, because it's not okay. I mean, there was a time where you would buy a game and you got everything, and it was fun, and it had a beginning, and it had an end, and it was wonderful, and there were no microtransactions in the middle. And you know what? If there is going to be DLC, it should be because you love the game so damn much that you want more of it. So you decide, like, oh, the story's done, but I want the details now. So I'll buy this DLC because this wasn't part of the story that I needed to know to be able to complete it. I just want more. But with EA games, and especially with EA games, you have to purchase the DLC to be able to finish the game that you purchased. And that is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, can I just say me too, or ditto to everything that you just said? Because it's one thing, I get it, like, microtransactions are a thing in modern gaming. It's a practice that got adopted and accepted, and a lot of companies use it. But the problem is they're not using it, they're abusing it. And like you said, to not even be able to finish the main portion of a game without the requirement for an intense amount of grinding, unnecessary grinding, or pay to win type scenarios, like, oh, just pay to get this stuff and then you can continue, is just wrong. And the fact that the company gets called out on it, puts their foot down, and more recently now has backpedaled, saying that, you know, they're going to try to fix this problem, it just makes them look bad. But the problem is when you're a big gaming studio, how often or how much does this affect your bottom line? You know, you're still going to sell a lot of this game to the people who are just, you know, have really deep pockets, or whose parents have really deep pockets. And I don't see it really changing the industry, maybe just EA, because they've overstepped, like, they've crossed the line, right? So you're now pushing them back over onto the other side, but they're still moving that line closer and closer to this being acceptable.
And don't get me wrong, like, I'm really okay with microtransactions. It's fine. Like, if it's something that can get me to some other level or point or character sooner, but it's not a required part, fine. I'm totally fine. Like, I've definitely used microtransactions in my Assassin's Creed games. They're my favorite games. And every time I purchase one of them, guess what? I finish the game. And then I decide I want more. So I pay them more money because I decided that I want more content. And I'm totally fine with that. I have no problems with that because I support that, right? What I don't support is buying a game, not finishing it, and then paying the more money to finish it. I don't support that. Not down with that. It's not cool. It's bad business, and it's bad form.
Well, EA, what are you going to do?
Uh, you're going to be missing $60 for me every year. So I don't know how you're going to handle it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it'll be fine.
I don't know how you're going to handle me not giving you my $60. Just as long as everyone else doesn't give them $60, right?
Right. Right.
Well, hopefully they sort their stuff out, man, because like you said, this isn't the first occurrence, right?
Right. No.
It's like they already got the slap on the wrist. Now it's like, what the heck, guys? Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right. And it's like, it is like across all their games. Like, it's just a fundamental problem with this company. And they've been like the worst gaming company for years. Like, this is nothing new. They're just, they're one, not getting better, and two, getting worse. And that's the problem, is that they're not even staying the same. It's not even consistent. It's just getting worse. And that's really...
They broke some records, you know?
The most downvoted thing on Reddit.
The most downvoted post on Reddit ever.
Thank you. Ever. By not margins, right? Not like, oh, it's just better. No, by like a landslide. By a planet slide, this is the most downvoted Reddit thing ever.
So, taxing Reddit. Saying Reddit, they go on Reddit. EA Sports is like, hey, we'll make a post. And Reddit's like, oh, God, prepare for server overload. Spin up more clusters!
So... Moving on from EA, because I could, with my Xbox and my EA, I could really just go on forever.
I'm just writing these down as buttons I can eventually poke later, you know?
Yeah, just keep them tallied.
Just the troll that I am, you know, is like, oh man, like all I know, I can mention, you know, just two things, and it will send Jim just off the rails.
Yeah, if you really want to get Jim's pulse up, all you got to do is mention either of these.
It happens in real life. It doesn't just have to happen on a podcast. I mean, I'll just be walking by a stranger's conversation and just freak out and be like, do you know about EA? Do you know about Microsoft? And they're like, we don't know you, man. And I'm like, you're going to know me in a minute. And it's a problem.
That's a problem.
To move on to a company that I really like, which is Tesla, is announcing something new and very special. And that is a new truck. And not just any sort of truck, but a semi-truck. Very exciting, and I think it's a big deal. So have you guys heard anything more about this Tesla truck?
So I caught the post on Twitter, and I was like, oh, it's going to happen at 8 o'clock. So I came home and then had to get ready for the podcast. I had to do my yoga and make sure I had everything out of the way to get to recording. So I tossed this in the outline like right before, you know, before 8 o'clock, and I missed everything. But I think Lou was able to watch it.
So I can report that the truck is cool. I do think it's got some innovative things, and in typical, you know, Tesla fashion, they kind of try to go over the top. So it looks like some of the things that were really surprising to me, at least, were it has a drag coefficient that is lower than a Bugatti, which I thought was like insane for a semi to have a drag coefficient that low. Another thing that was really interesting to me is that they have some sort of panels on the side of the truck that extend back to the trailer itself to close the gap that would normally be between the trailer and the actual cab. And that, I guess, reduces drag. They also explained that the each wheel has its own motor. So I shouldn't say that. It's got four motors. So essentially, like, each cluster of wheels has a motor, which makes it, I guess, impossible to jackknife, which I thought was kind of crazy. It's going to ship with all the typical, like, autopilot and crazy, like, tech stuff that the other cars already have. But I do have some gripes about this. This is the second release Tesla has had that I have personally been there to watch it, because like Adam, I was like, oh, cool, I got the thing on Twitter. I'll log in and watch. And I get there, and they typically seem to do this now. They're building a little bit of rapport with me where I don't like them on this front, where they say the event starts at 8, and it doesn't really start at 8. They just tell everybody it starts at 8. In reality, I guess they tweeted out about 8:15, about 8:05, sorry, that it would start at 8:15, and then it didn't even start at 8:15. It started at 8:25. So here we are like 25, 27 minutes later, something like that, and it just had gotten started. And then after all that, the streaming couldn't even stay up. So I was only getting bits and pieces of it, which was super frustrating. So I really wish Elon would kind of like stick to what he knows well, which is like building cars, trucks, rockets, and, you know, maybe let like YouTube handle the streaming.
You know, like, you gotta hand it though, like, Elon's keynotes are probably the most unconventional keynotes, but they're sometimes the most fun to watch, because you can tell he like didn't practice the slides, or he's not like really reading off of anything. He's just kind of sitting there talking and laughing and saying like, yeah, like, it's pretty cool truck that we have, you know, we made this truck and all this stuff. But yeah, I mean, punctuality, hey Tesla, not one of their strong suits.
Totally, like an undertone. Some other things I saw, they call it like a cockpit, but basically you sit in the center of the truck.
That thing looks awesome.
There's no mirrors, but there's like video feed for both sides of the truck itself. And I guess it is less expensive to operate than a normal diesel truck per mile, quote unquote. And I thought it was interesting too that I guess he goes into some nitty-gritty details about, like, I guess, you know, things I don't know because I'm not a trucker, but I guess when your windshield cracks on a truck, you have to actually, like, stop. You can't drive your truck because it's considered, like, obstructing your view. And I guess that happens semi-commonly, and that can't happen. So they built the, like, front glass out of, like, some crazy, you know, glass that, like, essentially won't crack. And they show these nice animations where they're basically throwing a pickup truck tow hitch at a piece of glass and then throwing it at the truck that they built, and it doesn't break, of course. So there's some crazy things that you know this thing seems to be doing. So it seems a little ahead of its time, you know, for right now, and it's not going to be here until 2019, but it seems exciting, and I really can't wait to see what they can do with this in terms of if they can really get this down to like you know, where they can do like convoys of these things, and, you know, really start to, you know, just kind of make it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. I think this could be really cool, but we'll see.
0 to 60 in 20 seconds with 80,000 pounds of load.
Yeah, right? That's nuts.
Wait, no, not 80,000 pounds.
Yeah, 80,000 pounds. It does 0 to 60 with a trailer, but an empty trailer in like 6 seconds. I was like, 6 seconds, 0 to 60? Like, why?
Because it can.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a total Elon line, like, you know.
Why does a dog lick his balls? Because it can.
I didn't take that there.
I didn't have the opportunity to watch. So, I mean, please let me know if this question has already been answered. But two kind of concerns that I have with the semi-truck is, one, I don't know how established Tesla's little charging stations and, like, replacement battery stations are. And I don't know if those charging stations have already been implemented at different truck stops around the United States, whatever the case may be, or wherever he's trying to get this up and going. And carrying 80,000 pounds of load up a hill, which is very common in the United States, takes a lot of gas. So I'd imagine that would take a lot of electricity. And so by the time you get to the top of that hill, it just kind of makes me wonder, well, how much battery am I going to have left? And as far as I know, Tesla batteries are pretty much like filling up your gas tank. It just seems like they last about as long and with the equal amounts of load. But, you know, if you are getting to the top of that hill and your battery is running low, and there's no charging stations to find, how is it that you're going to charge your truck?
So this here on their website, that's all I'm looking at, is the speed up a 5% grade, I'm assuming with the maximum capacity load, is 65 miles an hour. So it will be able to go up that hill, no problem. But like you said, energy consumption is an unanswered question. And the mile range says 300 or 500 miles. So 300 or 500, I guess, assuming lowest is 300, that would at least get you through one leg before you'd have to recharge. The other question is, how many batteries does this thing have, and how long does it take to charge even at like a supercharging station?
Yeah, so I assume, and I didn't hear this talked about, but that the batteries are all, you know, contained in the semi itself, not the trailer. And because it looked like, at least the ones they were showing, that they were just towing conventional trailers. And I assume that you're basically going to pull up to some sort of a supercharging station and input like four, you know, cables, and they're essentially all charging independent batteries at the same time. So that way you significantly cut down on the amount of time. But 300 miles is pretty low. I mean, you got to think, I think most of these, you know, big tractor trailers, you know, when they fill up, I'm pretty sure they can go more like 500 to 1,000. Don't quote me on that. I'm not a truck driver, but I think it's a lot longer.
I do not know. But regardless, it's going to be really exciting to see, you know, this innovation come in. I mean, regardless, it needs to happen.
Yeah, so in 3 years, when the first one finally hits the road, it'll be great. And then in 10 years, when there's a finally, like, a mass production, tons of them, and GM is making them, and all the main, you know, trucking companies, Peterbilt, things like that, are making them, then we'll see them on the road.
Yeah, it'll be awesome to see some that just don't have a driver. Like, oh, there goes the driverless truck barreling down the highway.
So you mentioned like convoys, right? And that would be the most efficient way to transport tons and tons of stuff, is just have this convoy of trucks, self-driving, that follow right behind each other, drafting the entire way, doing like what cycle riders do and what birds do, right? Like in switching out the lead car, you know, to take most of the drag while the others kind of just coast in the back. And just have those convoys traveling, you know, 80 miles an hour, just down whatever road they need to go to. Super efficient, just out of the way. I mean, I can't tell you, I'm going to be driving down to San Diego from, you know, Santa Cruz tomorrow afternoon. And usually you always get stuck behind a truck, you know, that has to pass, or there's another truck that's passing another truck. And that's always the slowest part of the entire drive. So if I was, you know, to see a giant convoy of trucks go by, that would just be like a dream to me.
Yeah, that'd be really cool to see.
Yeah, and with the fact that, and Elon mentioned this in the presentation, but they have pretty well mastered just following the object in front of you, you know, the truck in front of you. And so it would be really cool if we could get this to sort of end up being like a train thing, where essentially, you know, maybe a bunch of drivers get the trucks all onto the road, but then, you know, you only have to have like the first guy, you know, driving semi number one, and 10 or 15 semis behind it all just follow, because they're all going to LA from, say, San Francisco or whatever. And so everybody just gets out there, and then, you know, they can pretty much get out of their truck, and the first dude is leading the pack, but everything behind it is just literally going to use all its sensors and go, look, I just need to stay in this lane and follow that thing in front of me. And that would be super cool.
I mean, what a cool thing for truck drivers, for this thing to actually accelerate.
Yeah, to actually have some oomph behind it.
Yeah, I mean, that must be just like, I never thought, like, if me, Jim, the truck driver, right, would want a vehicle that accelerates, and I'd be really floored about that, because I can't stand it when I'm going up a hill and there's somebody in front of me that can't accelerate the car. It's not their fault, it's their car, whatever, but still, it's like I want to get going and your car can't. So the days where you're the slow truck going up the hill are coming to an end, and I think that's a really cool thing, and it'll make it a lot safer.
So my last question is, when do you think this will be available in the truck driving simulators, like on PC and stuff like that?
Like 6 months.
Well, you think they're gonna have like all the specs for how this car actually works in 6 months? They're going to be able to, or they're just going to go off the spec paper and say, like, yeah, that's probably how it works.
Yeah, they'll start hacking at it pretty quick. Come on. But in terms of like actually like a realistic one, like provided by Tesla down to the T, like that's going to be a while.
You know what I'm talking about? Like there's a game that's just a truck simulator, right? Where you just drive trucks all day.
Yeah. I've seen them. It's essentially like the... what was that? Flight Simulator, Microsoft Flight Simulator of the truck version.
Yeah, and the Farming Simulator, same thing, right? But I'm curious when this model of semi is going to go into that game. So it will be a microtransaction that you have to unlock to beat the final section of that game, Jim. Don't worry.
Oh God!
If EA makes it, I'll never play it.
Truck Simulator. Who by who? EA. Nah, fuck that.
Fuck that shit. I don't need any of that. So this is kind of an interesting thing that someone dropped in. Looks like it was Adam that dropped it in. Firefox Quantum released from beta. I have no idea what this is, but it sounds really interesting, and it sounds like it's related to quantum computing, which I'm super interested in, but I could be totally wrong. So, Adam.
You're wrong.
Neat. I like being wrong, because then I learn things.
I mean, I guess you could equate it to something like that. It's so Firefox has been, it's an open source operating system, or it's not operating system, excuse me, browser, internet browser. Wow. But it's been kind of the de facto open source browser for a long time, made by the Mozilla Foundation. And it's been almost neglected, like where you see other, you know, web browsers, like Microsoft has Edge, you know, Mac OS has Safari, and Google has Chrome, where those have kind of, you know, taken off and their big thing has been performance. Firefox has kind of been lagging behind in terms of performance and just keeping up with like the modern browsers. So Firefox Quantum was kind of like their full redesign, a full UI redesign and a full like CSS rendering engine redesign. So they went through a lot of code. I think they're, what they advertise is that there's over 7 million lines of code that they changed, and it got released today. So I was running the developer preview for a long time and really liked the UI. I fell off the Firefox train when they started falling behind in terms of the other browsers, but they released on Tuesday. And Firefox Quantum, it's the latest version. You guys should download it. And it's great. Like, I love it so far. It's a lot speedier. I don't think it's as speedy as some of, like, the other browsers that take advantage of, like, some of the operating system hardware. Like, especially with macOS Safari, right, you have so many hooks into WebKit that's built into the OS. It's, like, you kind of have that advantage. And then Chrome, they do all sorts of, you know, advantage on their side, but I don't want to say it's as fast as the other two, but it's fast enough. And the one thing I liked about Firefox is it was endlessly customizable, and it still is. So take a spin.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah, like you, Adam, I kind of fell off the bandwagon when they sort of seemed to just abandon the software, if you will. It just kind of went down a path I wasn't really a fan of. But if it's been polished, I'm happy to check it out again.
Sounds awesome. I do like good web browsers. A little bit of follow-up. I dropped this in just because of our last conversation about space colonization, and something that I thought was really important for us to talk about, which we didn't get to, was how to terraform a planet. Would either of you happen to know how that happens or know anything about it?
No. I don't know what that is.
I mean, I had like a vague idea, but only from like sci-fi when they're like, oh, they're terraforming, you know, in like Superman, Man of Steel, they're terraforming the planet. And the alien, you know, from Independence Day, they're just coming to terraform the planet. So that's all I really, you know, my high level view is like making the planet more suitable to inhabit for your species.
That's actually a really great way to put it. Was that last bit that you said?
Oh, not the aliens and all that stuff before? Just
Well, we're the aliens to Mars, right?
Yep, exactly.
So, or we're the aliens to the moon. So terraforming a planet for humans is like, well, we need fresh water. We need some kind of atmosphere. It'd be nice to have Earth-like gravity because that's what our bodies are used to. It can't be too hot. It can't be too cold. You know, we kind of like it. And, you know, pretty comfortable temperatures, you know, in the 70s is pretty nice. We enjoy that. So the thing about Mars is that it's its Martian surface is actually about 2% water. So if you actually were to take the soil and put it in a microwave, you'd actually get water out of it because it would cause it to vapor and yada, yada, yada. So they actually found out that there's quite a bit of water that just sits in the Martian layer. I mean, there's quite a bit of clay there too. And the only way that clay can be made is with water. So there's quite a bit of water there. And there's a lot of water in the ice caps as well. And so what they really want to do is there's a lot of canyons and a lot of places where there is strong evidence where water used to exist. And what they want to do is they want to basically reintroduce water to the planet and basically see what happens. And there's a lot of things that you can do. So like kind of the first thing is adding water. And then the second thing in terms of our species, right? And the second thing would be kind of introducing plant life and seeing if it survives. I mean, there's a lot to it. It's not a quick process, and there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. But essentially, to your point, Adam, basically what you said, terraforming a planet is to make it suitable to your species. So you go to some planet that already kind of sits in a pretty good spot in the solar system where it already gets kind of enough warmth from the sun, and the planet is reasonable to, it's like, oh, we can probably fix its atmosphere and fix its topography and stuff to make it work again. And basically ignite that living state again.
It's a good point that we totally missed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny how we just kind of, there were so many different times where that could have been brought up, but it just wasn't there.
We were so obsessed about just getting there. We didn't know what to do once we got there.
It's like a dog chasing cars, right?
I wouldn't know what to do if I caught one.
Thanks, Heath Ledger.
Oh, so sad.
Oh, so sad. So they're one of the longest astronauts, in this case happens to be a cosmonaut. It was Valery, and I'm going to butcher the last name, Polyakov, something like that, some Russian last name, cosmonaut. They were in space for 14 months, which is a crazy amount of time.
Yeah, that was just something that we mentioned last time. We're like, hey, well, how long has someone been up in space? It was a question that we asked and kind of left it lingering. So now we have the answer.
I'm not sure when he went up. I feel like it was in the 70s. I feel like it was because of the space race, but I could be wrong. I don't know a lot about this cosmonaut.
Man, you're causing follow-up to now have to contain more follow-up.
Sorry.
Just like, just do what I do and pretend like you know exactly what it is. Just state the fact that's in the follow-up and be like, okay, that's good, cool, we're good.
Well, so Valery, he was up in space for 14 months. I know all the things to know about it. So anyway, I have no idea what cryptojacking is, so... do you guys want to explain what that is? Because I have no idea.
Yeah, I can explain this a little bit. So I put this in here, and I know we talked about this a little bit. Adam, I think you were kind of explaining that there's this kind of slimy way where a lot of sites are kind of advertising using, some that they're just trying to solve, the blockchain for Bitcoin. And we were kind of going back and forth about the ethics of that, but it looks like there's a JavaScript implementation by a company called CoinHive that does this. And it was talked about this week. I was listening to another podcast, Security Now, and they were talking about it a little bit. And I thought it was just interesting to note that crypto jacking is, I guess, like a new term where these sort of like hackers, quote unquote, go in, take over a site and inject, this sort of JavaScript into the site. And then they feed the money made back to them. So these sites that are kind of like abandoned on the web are essentially making them money over the long term. And so it's a new term I'd never heard. And I thought it was just interesting to share. And then I also saw that a blocker that I use, or an ad blocker called OneBlocker on my Mac, is now blocking mining by default. So if you're a user of that at all, you don't have to do anything extra to worry about that. Because I know, Adam, I think you said just disable, I think you said JavaScript, but obviously that breaks a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's the free way to do it. I don't want to throw money at a fire, so.
I threw money at that fire a long time ago.
I'll take the free way. So CoinHive is I think, like you mentioned, the kind of service that they use, which has the API and the script to basically go and do the mining with the idle cores. And Security Now, like Steve Gibson, that's a great podcast to fall asleep to because it's really dry. But there's a lot of really good content in there. So if he's giving like a breakdown of this, I actually really want to give that a listen to, because he will analyze it to death. And you'll know everything you ever wanted to know about that after you come out of that episode. So,
yeah, I do have to say it wasn't the entire episode, but it was mentioned, and I have to agree. Like Steve's, I'm not so much a fan of Leo, but Steve is sometimes it's a mind stretching exercise to kind of keep up with him.
Yeah, Leo just needs to stop talking over people. Like, I get it, man. I get that you own the network, but just let him talk. Let the person talk. He always interrupts people. And I fill out their survey every year and I say that. I'm like, Leo needs to stop interrupting people. Leo needs to stop interrupting people. And they don't listen. So that's Security Now is the only podcast I subscribe to from the Twit Network.
Me as well.
He just can't help himself.
Awesome reviews for Twit from this podcast. From one podcast to another. Twit, awesome job. I'm sure I'm the same thing. Like, I just talk over everyone anyway, so.
Well, gents, I'm quite excited to talk about this because we've really brushed over it a few times, but we haven't really gone into depth about it. And it's something that is becoming increasingly more popular because the hardware exists to where it actually works. And that thing is augmented reality. So what is it? What is AR?
An acronym.
What is augmented reality?
Words.
What does augmented reality do?
I can hear the click on the keyboard whenever you're unmuting the mic. It's great. So augmented reality, in my sense, in my limited brain definition, is basically overlaying items into what you currently see, but not replacing them. So basically taking what you see and adding elements, superimposing them into that reality to, for lack of a better term, augment or enhance that experience or overlay UI or whatever it may be.
I think that was a pretty good summary there, old wise man.
Yeah, so augmented reality is really cool. It has a lot of great purposes. When in a time unit is ubiquitous. So what do we mean by that?
Well, I'm just kind of curious when you all think. I mean, we're starting to see the basics of that today. I mean, we start to see AR is starting to become a little bit more mainstream in the last year or two. It's kind of, I feel like, taken off a lot. But when are we going to see this just like pervasive? And I don't know. For me, I still think it's 5 to 10 years before we really see this kind of just all around us, everywhere we are. But I'm kind of curious what your guys' thoughts are on this timeline.
I see this becoming or spreading everywhere when you don't have the need for another screen or something that you wear to see it. That's the time that I see it actually taking off. Because right now, like, you're still tied to something. You still have to hold something. And the whole point about augmenting your reality is to have the least amount of friction, in my opinion. So if I have to put something on to see this augmented reality, to me, it doesn't work. But if it's just there, if there's like hologram projections, I mean, you can start thinking into the future there. But as soon as holograms start popping up without the need for me to wear something or hold something in front of my face, I think that's when you're going to see a big push into that space, a lot more adoption. But that I don't foresee happening for another 10 years minimum.
I don't know if it's 10 years away. I feel like this is really becoming integrated, and it kind of is everywhere already. And I mean, not maybe in the sense in which we're saying like it's frictionless, but it is everywhere. I mean, you know, it was said in one of Apple's keynotes that it became the biggest AR kit overnight with the release of whatever thing that they were doing. I think it was AR kit, right? So it's out there, and it's in the hands of so many people and in the hands of so many developers. And it's just, I don't know, once we start putting the hardware in our glasses and lenses and whatever else, which already exists, I think you're right. Once it's wearable and it's frictionless, then yeah, it's really going to be kind of everywhere. But I feel like it's a little bit closer than 10 years. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be ambitious, but I feel like it's pretty close. There's like heads-up displays in cars that exist now that are just on like a little piece of glass. Like, I mean, like it's kind of there, I feel like.
I feel like it's there in a limited sense, right? When we say it's everywhere, I envision it not being just in my car or, you know, in the select model of car as a HUD. Or if I hold up my phone and I can do this, I envision it like being one of your primary input methods for everything you interact with, right? Like, I want to open the fridge, right? or I want to view my calendar, it's on the fridge, it's on the stove, it's on whatever. That's when I envision augmented reality being everywhere. Being able to invoke that wherever I am easily without this form of friction, right? But I don't think we're there. I think we have all these different applications trying to see what works, right? Like we've experimented with car HUDs. We'll talk about that more. We've experimented with, you know, the headsets that augment reality. We've experimented with looking through the, you know, lens of another device, right? Like phones, right? Like when you mentioned Apple's AR kit, yes, they became the biggest AR platform overnight because iOS is installed in a large, you know, number of phones out there. And now all of them can support augmented reality. But when I think of a finished product, right, like augmented reality, we're still in baby steps. We're still in almost a prototyping phase, right? We're trying to see what works. But once we find the thing that works, and in my opinion, that's a frictionless augmented reality that's displaying projections, so some spatial augmented reality, when that's everywhere, that's what I think will work. And I think we're just really far away from that. But you're absolutely right. There are real world examples out there today, but not at the scale where I consider everywhere.
Fair enough. I can agree with you on that. So maybe it's not deployed in such a way that it feels exactly helpful. I mean, maybe what you're getting at, or kind of what I'm picking up.
Yep. I would say that's fair, right? As I feel like right now it's still almost gimmicky, right? Where it's more of a feature, not a utility.
So what would make it useful? What sort of things can we see that would make it more useful?
I mean, so you think about right now how the thing that's catching on right now is voice control, like voice commands, right? We're talking into the air and having a command be performed. What I envision being useful is talking into the air to say a command, and then no matter where I am, having a display somewhere that can pop up and show me other information, or a way that I can easily tap or gesture or whatever it may be to bring up an interface at any given moment, or have dedicated stations to actually like bring up an interface. The way I envision it being super useful is if you've ever watched, you know, Minority Report's a bad example because of all the gestures and convoluted stuff that he has to do. But like when you look at something like Iron Man, right? Like where he sits back on a desk and he just kind of swipes his hands and everything, you know, just kind of shows up, and he can like pinch and open things, you know, which is kind of a grandiose idea of what it might be. But that's what I consider useful, is being able to pull up a display no matter where you are in an easy fashion that doesn't require, that can basically fade away to nothing, right? The one of the best things about AR is like once you turn off, especially with spatial AR, once you turn off AR, that space is basically open, right? Like you can put whatever there, you can bring it up anywhere over anything. It doesn't really impact what you already have out there. So I'm doing a really bad job of explaining it because I'm just like thinking in my head of all the things that I wish it was doing right now, but you kind of get the gist of what I'm talking about, I hope.
So what I gather from that is the equivalent of speaking into the air and receiving a response, you know, the kind of the way that we interact with software is with gestures. So if I were to do a gesture in the air, I would get some kind of hologram or some kind of display that has information for me.
In a very basic sense, that's one of the features I would like, but to be able to do that anywhere. Like if I'm brushing my teeth and I swipe up, you know, like near the mirror, I want like a today view, right? Like a list of all the things that I need to do today, like a reminder list or a calendar or something, right? Like I would love to be able to do that when I'm brushing my teeth or when I'm making coffee in the morning, just be able to swipe up anywhere and see this information, right? Or speak into the air and see it somewhere. And right now we're doing it with like handheld devices, so I have to look at like my wrist, but it would be nice to be able to just overlay that onto whatever I'm doing. And like I said, when you have something you're wearing, especially something in between your eye and the real world, it's a lot easier. But doing it spatially, I think just lessening the requirement for you to wear something would be my ultimate dream.
Yeah, I mean, AR in its current form, at least to me, when I'm using it on my phone or my iPad, it feels clumsy, and I don't exactly have steady hands, and so everything just kind of shakes and wobbles, and so it doesn't feel super smooth to me, and that might just be me. I don't know how other people are, but it just feels a little bit clumsy, and it feels a little bit cumbersome and out of the way at the moment. It's not like my go-to feature. But that's just kind of my feelings on it. Lou, what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I think it's interesting that Adam wants it kind of spatially, and I would agree that in the very long term, I would like to see that happen. I don't know how we get there. I can't see a technology today where that would be possible, unless you're going to start to think about maybe like contact lenses or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how we would accomplish something like that, but I do think, at least in the short term, wearable technology like glasses is probably going to be the easiest, and especially if we can start to sort of double that up with, like, you know, I don't know, people need prescriptions, people need, you know, just reading glasses, people need sunglasses. If I had like transitions with AR in them, that'd be like the most ideal thing. I don't wear glasses, but I could even wear just clear ones. You know, I think that in the short term would work for me for at least, you know, the next 5 or 10 years until we maybe can start to think about what that technology Adam's talking about, where it's just spatially there.
Just to build off of what you're saying, I think to kind of bring together what you're saying, what Adam is saying, it'd be kind of cool if your contact lenses or your glasses were able to somehow track your hand gestures. And as you make a gesture up, there will be some kind of display on your glasses or lenses that'll bring up that information. So to you, you can see it, but it stays private because only you can see it, and everyone has their own kind of custom AR within their own frame of sight.
So then you're sitting on the couch with your significant other, and then you swipe up, and then you swipe some things, and then you have your headset on, so only you can hear it and only you can see it, and your significant other looks at it like, what are you doing? What are you watching right now?
Just whacking in the air, darling. Don't worry.
Whacking in the air?
I can just see it right now, like Adam's on the sofa, just moving his hands around, like just waving the air around. And
well, I don't want the contact lens. No, I don't want anything.
Let's talk more about the whacking situation.
I'm just saying, you know, like as soon as, and remember when Bluetooth headsets came out and people were just constantly talking and there wasn't a phone up to the ear. So we kind of had that social like stigma of like, what are they talking to me? Like what's happening? Right. Cause they were just talking to the air, and that felt, it was kind of weird and awkward and took a while to get used to. I consider like having contact lenses where only you can see the thing that's happening, and like doing gestures would be the same thing as like, is there something over there? Do I need to look that way? What are you pointing at? Oh, you're reading email. I'm sorry.
You know, there are some psychological disorders that exist where we see that. So hopefully we'll have kind of a cultural and societal shift to just accept that people are gesturing in the air for their AR.
Yes, that's true.
So let's talk about where this kind of stuff is available. It's definitely available in phones. We see it everywhere from Samsung to Google to iPhone to Essential. I'm sure they have some kind of AR stuff. But let's start off with Apple's AR kit. That seems like some pretty impressive software to me. I don't know a whole lot about it. I have very limited knowledge in the development world, but I'm sure you two have more knowledge in that sense. You guys kind of do this sort of stuff, right? So what do you guys think about Apple's AR kit? Do you think it's a success? Do you think it needs a lot of work? Do you feel like it's a good start?
I definitely think it's a good start. It needs polish still. Don't get me wrong there. I mean, the hard part here is like, I have to praise Apple because they're probably the leader at the moment in terms of this, in terms of deployed on the most amount of phones and the biggest probably app ecosystem that supports it. So there's a lot of advantages there, but I think we've only dipped our toe in the water there. You know, it really only recognizes flat surfaces. It doesn't recognize walls or, you know, like corners and things like that. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but I think they are the leader right now. So we got to give them that credit where it's due.
Well, I think, like you said, right now it's building a framework for how people can use this creatively to solve problems, right? That's one thing with when Apple builds a framework is they try to give developers all the tools that they can to accomplish what they want to with this specific feature. And augmented reality in this case, right? Apple has a vision of what augmented reality, of what they want it to look like. And this is their way of enabling developers to kind of push that vision in other ways, right? Whenever Apple releases a framework to someone, it's like, hey, what can you do with this? What cool things can you come up with? And a lot of that is like to provide some inspiration for how this technology will be used in the future. So I think right now, like, the most interesting application for me at this juncture is MeasureKit, right? Where you can basically measure from point A to point B or map out a room just by moving your camera around. And I see a lot of utility in that application. So I think as in terms of, are they doing an awesome job as in terms of Apple and ARKit? I think, like you said, it gives developers a large platform for people to test these types of apps, right? You talk about becoming the largest AR platform overnight, right? When people install iOS 11, it's a big thing in terms of pushing the technology forward because it enables people to build things, have people test those things, give feedback, and just kind of keep that cycle going.
I think what's really great about Apple's ARKit is it doesn't have to have the latest and greatest iPad or iPhone or iPod or whatever the case may be. Like, it works from the SE on. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you need the iPad Pro. I think you can just use iPad, I think, which has their 8 chip in it. I'm not sure off the top of my head. But I mean, I think that's really cool that, you know, they kind of open this platform to a lot of Apple users, to be able to use it. And maybe not even like core Apple users either. You know, it's like, you don't have to have a Mac. You might have an iPad. You might have an iPhone that you don't use or whatever the case may be. So it's really sent out to a lot of folks.
There are a lot of devices that are definitely supported. I think it is like they go off their A series chips. So I'm pretty sure it's like A9 and later, if I'm not mistaken. So that's whatever the case. I mean, if you start to think about Apple sells, you know, like hundreds of millions of devices a year, and you're talking about like 2 or 3 years worth of devices are supported, that's nuts. There's, you know, easily, you know, hundreds of millions of devices that could run this right out of the gate.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, Apple obviously isn't the only one in the game. We have Google's AR Core. And so, you know, that increases a really big, you know, platform to those users too. And I'm even more limited on my knowledge of Google's AR Core. So, what do you guys know about it?
So, to be completely honest, I don't know a whole lot about Google's AR Core. I do use an iPhone, so I don't have an Android device, and I haven't for a very long time. I did have one for a hot second, like about 4 years ago, but it's been a long time. Anyway, in regards to it, though, one of the things that I did hear is that they sort of have very fragmented support because there are so many Android devices out there in the world, and unlike Apple, they are all, it's, I don't know, Android really reminds me of Microsoft. It's like trying to support all these, you know, different chipsets and all these different models, and so you're really trying to just get this to work, this very complex thing to work on so many devices, and in reality, they're really struggling with that, it seems like. So if you want this feature, my suggestion is stick with the big names, stick with Samsung, stick with their, like, not only within Samsung probably makes like hundreds of phones at this point, stick with the big names within the Samsung line, or stick with the, you know, Google phones that they are making, so the Pixel and so on, because those are probably the devices that are going to get the support for it, and the rest of them, well, you may not.
So it's worth pointing out, right, that Android, like you said, is like Microsoft in terms that they fit a need for people who wanted a cheaper alternative with 90% of the same benefits that you would get from a device like an iPhone, right? Like, the 10% that you may be missing is like, okay, the pure optimization of the OS and the hardware, and maybe some of, you know, these iOS-only apps, whatever it's going to be. But Android fills a pretty important place in the market, right? And it adds competition, which is good for any company. So the more people play in a space, the more that space is going to grow. So I mentioned before, right? It's great to have that feedback loop of like, hey, you know, these customers really like this about ARKit, or these developers are using it in this way. It's also great to have another company saying like, wow, look at what they're doing with, you know, their augmented reality platform. And it just, it drives companies to push the boundaries of what we can do with the tech. So in terms of like, I know we kind of put in here, I was like, well, which one, you know, is better, or which one do you want to get in this scenario? It's like, both of them are going to have pros and cons, either way you look at it. Like Lou said, stick to flagship phones. If you really want like the latest and greatest Android, that's just a thing that most people who buy Android phones know at this point. But the way I look at this, and the way I like to look at, you know, just the marketplace in general, is the more people own different things, the better, because the more you see what's available, because no one's doing the exact same thing, right? There are lawsuits for that kind of thing. So everyone's playing a little bit differently, right? Like Google, you can see they're very focused on like more developy, like techie ways of using like AR and using like their data framework that they've basically built up over all of these years through search to kind of model and figure out how they can use machine learning to impact their AR core. And Apple is very much like, hey, let's get this into the hands of as many people as we can, find out ways that we can use this, and find out ways that this is going to kind of impact people's lives, or how will it benefit humanity, right? That's very much how Apple presents things in keynotes, and very much how I view, or how I suspect they view their mission, right, is to basically use technology to change people's lives. And I think that's the goal of every company, but Apple very plainly states this is what they want to do. So I just view more competition in this space is going to lead to more enhancements, which eventually, after 10 years, like I said, will hopefully get to my spatial AR dream, where I can just invoke, you know, heads-up displays anywhere I want.
Absolutely. I think it's really exciting to have all this competition on the market, because it's just going to, like, you know, to your point, just make the other companies really focus on polishing it up and making it what it should be and what it needs to be. It's just really cool. It's just really exciting. And I'm really excited for a lot of the medical stuff that I think is going to come along with it too, which we'll get into later. But I'd also really like to talk about something that we kind of touched on earlier, which is eyeglasses. So, you know, this is something that we can, you know, dive into a little bit more now. And I was looking at the link that we dropped in the show notes, and it looks pretty interesting. So, you know, this is this whole idea that, you know, your glasses basically can augment your reality, just like how your phone or your tablet can do, right? So, what do you guys think about the implementation of this? It looks like it's pretty bulky to me at the moment. Doesn't look like it's very with your life. It just feels very out of the way still. In the demos that they used, feel very cumbersome to use. It just feels like there's a lot of friction there. But I feel like it's you know, there has to be a first step for everything. So what do you guys think?
The link that we have in here, right? This all looks like prototypes. Like, that's just what it looks like, right? That's why I feel like the technology is there, but we're still in such an early phase, because all of these, like you said, they look bulky. It's you're tied to something, right? You need something else in the way to get this experience. And there are tons of applications. Like, we talk about, you know, glasses, right? Being it's kind of like the duh, okay, yeah, that's how we solve that problem, right? Like, everyone just has to wear glasses. You know, if we want to overlay something in front of someone's reality, well, we already kind of do that, because with corrective lenses, like, we're augmenting their reality right now. It's like they see the world as all blurry, but then we put this in front of them and hey, it looks great now, right? So even polarized sunglasses are kind of like an early version of augmenting your reality, changing something to a different, you know, color, right? It's very simple, but that's kind of the terms that this form factor just naturally fit into this category. But when I think of like glasses, I think of the Google Glass, right? When that came out. Did you guys ever try Google Glass? You, Lou, or Jim?
No, I did not get a chance to try them. I can say I saw only one person in a public setting with them on ever, and you look kind of goofy, right? And they...
Because you're a glass hole.
claps. The one thing I can say is Google Glass immediately for me was a privacy concern. There was the camera thing on it, you know, if I recall correctly, and so like you could take pictures of people, and that was kind of, I don't know, right away it already irked me the wrong way.
I don't think it's anything different than what YouTubers do or anybody else now. I mean, it feels like everybody's kind of on camera just with how integrated the camera is into our daily lives. So, I mean, we're taking photographs of strangers all the time.
Yeah, I think now, right, you see people carrying around phones all the time. And it's almost safe to say that, you know, someone's probably taking a picture that you're in at some point in time without your consent, right? Like, we're talking about going to Disneyland. And I know if I just walk through Disneyland, I'm going to be in someone's Snapchat video just waiting in line for Pirates of the Caribbean because they're, you know, recording it with whatever. And Google Glass, you know, yeah, there were all the privacy concerns, but that's not why I brought it up. I brought it up because it was kind of the first version of an augmented reality where it tried to augment your reality, but still keep the two things separate, right? So you would have to look up into the corner of your eye. So I used Google Glass for a hot total of 15 minutes. Someone was gracious enough to let me just try on their pair and look and kind of demo for a little bit. And I have to say, like, it's an interesting concept, right? So when you talk about, and this kind of like kickstarts the whole AR discussion that we've been having, even though it's already rolling. So I don't know why I'm kickstarting again, but it just feeds into it. Looking up into the corner and seeing, you know, email messages or seeing the weather or seeing whatever it was really convenient in a sense to just be able to look up in the corner and see that. And when I envision like AR glasses, right, having something in front of my eyes and like always having like the weather in the top corner, right? It's just, like I said, friction-free. That's the whole goal, I think, of technology is to still benefit your life, but get out of the way. Make it to where you don't have to, or it's almost second nature to invoke an action to get what you're looking for. So looking up in the corner when I have a message and having it read me that message, just as I'm walking down the street, not looking at my wrist, not looking at whatever, but I'm already looking because I'm walking and being able to look up in the corner to see something. And Google Glass did that fairly well, right? And they had the bone conduction, you know, the headphone on there. So very, very early version of AR and was still used in certain applications. We talked about that last time, right? Like there are still some mechanical positions that use Google Glass to have a manual up in front of them at all times. And you can see this in the link that whoever put this in the outline is there's a lot of those scenarios. Like there's a guy working on, you know, like a jet turbine, right? And he has a glasses on there, I'm assuming to see like manual torque specifications, whatever it may be, an exploded view of the part that he's looking at. So in short, like glasses were kind of a natural way to get AR in front of your face, for lack of a better term. But I think that's where you'll see the most common use in the next 5 years, but I don't think that's the end all be all.
I think you made a lot of good points on that. And just to kind of go back to the privacy concerns, because I thought that was interesting. You know, I'm motivated to use the camera on my phone, but I don't think having the camera on my glasses is going to motivate me more to take pictures more often. Because I'm not super motivated to take a picture of my life super often as it is. So I don't know that I'm a pretty average consumer. I probably use my camera about the average amount that everyone else uses it. So I don't know how much more enticed or encouraged people are going to use or are going to be to use their camera if it's on their glasses. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So did you see that Snapchat took like a huge loss on their spectacles that they didn't sell? Do you remember those?
Yep.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, so they took a giant loss on that this last quarter because they didn't sell them because, yeah, no one wants to put on something, you know, that's a pair of sunglasses that just has a camera on it that you can use to capture video, right? It's taking a picture. It would be great to have like a constant, you know, just rolling buffer of footage that you saw with your eyes and be able to replay that. Like, there are things that I see or moments that I wish I would have videotaped, right? But it would be great to be able to go back just like, hey, rewind that 15 seconds and save that as a video clip, right? It would be great to have something always on, capturing from my vantage point to be able to capture those moments. But there's something different because when you take out a phone or you take out a camera, you end up like framing the shots and kind of getting the shot that you want to rather than just kind of stumbling upon, right? We have GoPros now, and this is kind of getting into a camera discussion, which I think we should table for another day. But you have GoPros and drones and all sorts of things that capture video and capture just the world around you. And having something on your face is like, well, my eyes do that. And it feels kind of creepy, like having something always on to do that. And it doesn't really motivate me because I'm seeing what I'm seeing. And I would much rather frame a shot than just assume that this is getting what I want it to get.
Absolutely. But yeah, we can go on for a long time about cameras and lenses and so forth. So this whole thing about cameras and kind of where augmented reality will go is it sounds like heads-up displays are going to be kind of the thing to have. And I'll be sure to drop a link in the show notes. But something that I am really impressed with that BMW, I remember BMW being one of the first ones to come out with it, was making a motorcycle helmet where it has information about your bike and the turn that you're on and like, you know, traffic information and stuff. It was really well done and just really clean and very informative and like really important information that they were making. I don't know if you guys are familiar with what I'm talking about, but I think that's really great for that particular setting.
I personally haven't seen that, but I know there's a lot that is changing on all bikes right now. It's kind of crazy what they're doing with you know, the bikes, and both from like the cluster on the bike is getting so much more technical these days, and the helmets.
Yeah, I remember when you put that in the show notes, and I was like, we're running out of time. Like, I think that was one where we were going too long on the user interfaces, and you know, we kind of skipped over that. But I have also seen like there's a Kickstarter for kind of the same thing, like a helmet that gives you a smart heads up display just in the visor that has things like a rear view mirror, even, right, to where there's a camera. You're getting the camera feed from the back of your helmet as well as your current speed, your, you know, driving directions, whatever it may be, to just keep that stuff just kind of right in your face. And especially for being on a motorcycle, right, where you have to be very alert and very conscious of what's happening, having to look down for any amount of time is very inconvenient. So the closer they can get that to, you know, your face without having to move your head, the better.
Absolutely. It's that whole idea of it being integrated in your life, but being out of the way.
Man, that friction. Get that friction the fuck out of there.
You're damn right. So someone brought up a really interesting point here in our show notes here, which is planes for pilots and for passengers. And I thought this was really interesting. Do you guys want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I dropped a link in here about specifically pilots. I mean, I think this is really where you see it sort of being really useful. I mean, I'm not going to dispute the fact that for passengers, it's got some uses too. But we are actually actively already seeing this kind of used in planes today. So, I mean, it of course, like we've talked about before, started with the military and has worked its way down into commercial aviation. And now we're seeing it into, you know, just normal use and just private pilots flying their own planes. But it's pretty cool. There's all sorts of safety overlays. The idea here is that, you know, the less you're actually taking your eyes off of the sky, the better you are. You're not looking at the instrument cluster. But there's all sorts of readings that it shows you, you know, you're like your height, your speed, your, you know, whether you're like pitching downward or upwards. And the one link I threw in the notes here, though, shows a glide slope for a landing on a runway. So the pilot basically sees this like a video game, and he just has to fly through a series of boxes, and if he goes through those boxes perfectly, then he'll land right on the numbers on the runway, which is awesome. And this is great for just safety, but you know, I mean, all pilots have to be trained to do this anyway, both from like visual approaches and what are called ILS approaches, where it's just instruments. And when you do instruments, it's like you have to be able to fly it. I think it's 200 feet above the ground, and then you basically you're under a hood, and then all of a sudden you lift the hood, and if you can't see the runway, then you have to do an abort landing and go around. But your ILS training, you basically learn how to do this all by instruments. But this is just a really unique way of doing this with AR, which is really, really, really cool. So I think this is only making it safer and is going to help in the long run. So I hope to see this more and more, even with things like, I don't know, cars. I could totally see this happening, you know, just with us as drivers. We would be probably safer if we knew what lane we had to be in and so on and so forth.
I think this is a great way to integrate this. It really looks super simple. I think that's a really important part of that, is that it's not complicated. It's just super easy to use.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about this, Adam? Have you ever like seen these before?
In video games? Sure.
So you haven't seen them in real life at all?
On a plane? No, I can't say that I've been on a plane and I've actually seen this in real life.
Oh, it's super cool. It's like this glass panel that, like, usually they're folds like up from the dashboard or like of the plane itself. But commonly, the ones I've seen are like a visor. They like come down on something, but they're super cool. I don't know. I get really excited about this sort of stuff because, you know, my background in aviation and like with rockets and all sorts of stuff. So this is just super cool to me, you know, to be able to, you know, not have to worry about, you know, glide slopes and like lining up. And it's just really nice to know that you kind of are playing a video game. And if you play it right, everybody will be safe.
But there's no reset button.
Life doesn't have a reset button, Jimmy.
Nope, it doesn't. And I can't just throw money at the problem when everyone's dead.
Yeah, Lou. Stop throwing money at stuff.
Sure you can. What are insurance companies for?
And he comes for the win. So what does this do for passengers? So how does this help the passenger on the plane?
So this is actually not like on the plane, but I guess this is all about like I'm pretty sure Gatwick Airport is what this article is talking about, but I'm pretty sure that's a airport in London, but it's their smaller airport. Heathrow is the big one, if I'm not mistaken. But basically, this is all about like getting passengers to the right gates at the right time. And obviously, I'm pretty sure we have all been in the situation before where like our plane landed late and we're rushing and we're in an airport we don't know. We don't know how to get from gate A to gate B. And we're working to read, you know, a bunch of signs as quickly as we possibly can to just get ourselves from plane one to plane two. And sure, there are, you know, all sorts of like signage and airport maps and stuff like that that is trying to help us. But the idea here is that with augmented reality, we might be able to get this done faster. And it looks like they're doing this with beacons, and it helps customers or the customers of the airlines, you know, get to the right gates and the right places on time. And so I thought this was just interesting that it's starting to be used in these like high traffic areas more. And, you know, hopefully it ends up saving the airline money in the long run because more passengers make it to their, you know, planes on time and you know, they don't fly with empty seats. So that's cool.
That is really cool. This next topic here is probably one of my favorite things that we brought up is integration into cars. And I really like the idea of this because I don't know if you two have ever been here, but, you know, I'll be listening to my navigation, you know, through my phone. And I'll look at the screen and I'll see my little blue dot. And I'm trying to orient which exit that I need to take based off of where my little blue dot is and where I am in the real world. I'm trying to match that up. And sometimes I miss my exit and it's really frustrating. And so I have to reroute and blah, 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 blah. But if I have some kind of heads-up display on my car where the line just exists on the road as I see it and I just follow that line, kind of like in a video game where if you like push a button, it'll show you the, you know, the path that you're supposed to take, right? I mean, if that was in real life, that would super help me a lot. And I think that's a really cool integration into that as far as that goes. So what are your thoughts on that integration?
You know, I think in cars and planes, like when you're the driver of something, it makes sense, right? Because if you think about it, you're looking out this giant glass window, right? This glass in front of your face is a natural space to put this other information. And we've had it in the form of instrument panels, right? Like in the olden days. And now it makes so much more sense, like you said, to project that onto the real world. It makes it safer, right? Like you said, it makes it safer with planes, makes it easier to learn, easier to maneuver. It's the same thing with cars. And Jim, I love how you made the analogy to games, right? Like when in Gran Turismo, when you turn on the like, yeah, show me the lane that I'm, you know, the line that I should be taking and when I should be braking and things like that. And basically that's just, you know, hey, wouldn't it be great if cars actually did AR and we could train race drivers the same way that we, you know, play video games? Because that's what you're doing is almost gamifying the system. But in terms of in the link that someone put in here, which has, you know, the HUD that you would see in a car, makes total sense because it shows how far the car in front of you is or how far away it is and kind of where to turn and the line that you should be on and the speed that you're going and the speed limit of the road. It just puts all that stuff to a place like you said, Jim, where you don't have to look down, like you don't have to take your attention off of something to see it. And we can have the debate of like, well, you're still, you know, taking some attention off of, you know, what you're doing because you're looking at something else, but it's much less than changing the radio station or looking at your phone or text messaging, which is illegal. Don't do that.
So it's building off that idea of making it frictionless, right? So right now there's a big grind when I have to take my eyes off of the road and look at my phone to see where I need to go. Not that I'm saying that anyone should do that because it's illegal. Don't do that. But if you do that, then you know how hazardous that can be. So if that business is just on your windshield or just in front of you on a heads-up display, it just makes it way safer. And sure, there might be some friction point where for a second you're looking at where your line is in the road where you have to turn. But, you know, I'm not completely removing myself from the scene. You know, I'm still very active in what's happening in front of me and so on. So what are your thoughts on that, Lou?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that cuts down on that sort of time, that fraction of a second that we take our eyes off the road to do something is for the best. And I think this is an area in particular when we talk about AR that, you know, I know we've all given kind of different timescales. This seems like the give me brownie points area where in the next 5 to 10 years, we should probably see this be one of the very first areas along with glasses that are probably going to be our everyday devices that are going to start to get this integrated. And we're already seeing it, but cars are inherently expensive. And so there's a lot of room to say, hey, we're going to charge you, you know, $3,000 more for, you know, the AR package on your car. And, you know, everybody will buy it because of safety and all that good jazz. So I think there's a lot of room here for this to integrate into our lives, where on some of the other objects in our lives, like glasses or something like that, we don't always see the benefit right away because I don't know about you, but if you told me I had to buy like a $1,500 pair of glasses that was all of a sudden magical, I don't know that I would just throw $1,500 down. But if I'm buying a $30,000 car and someone says, hey, for $3,000 more, you can have the AR, I'm like, well, I'm already spending $30,000 of mine as well.
Coming from the guy who's willing to throw money at problems.
Yeah, I know. That made no sense. So you're willing to throw twice the amount at something that you're spending more money on just because you're spending more money on the thing? What?
Yep. You heard me right.
God, the logic of a guy who throws money on fires is a scary thing to behold. But I think in terms of like the moral of the story for AR, and I think, you know, Scott mentioned really early on, is friction fucking free, right? Like triple F. I want zero friction, because as soon as you get the friction out of there, it makes sense, right? And we're talking about like Lou said, the gimmies, like the low hanging fruit, right? Like, yeah, put it in cars. That makes 100%, you know, that makes total sense. Do it. You can put it in glasses. Yeah. Okay. Do that. That makes sense. Right. So these are the areas where, yes, makes sense. And the next one that I think, you know, we're going to talk about is medical, right? Like, yeah, that's a gimme, right? Put glasses on there when a doctor is doing surgery to see vitals or to see whatever. Like, that makes sense to me because that's solving a problem, right? Where you talk about now when a doctor performs surgery, you have all these monitors going and you have all these assistants and everything going on, and they have to know these surgeries kind of front to back to front to even, you know, just jump in there. But if they had the assistance of something in front of their face that had vitals or, you know, just stats for the patient, and then maybe something to help like identify potential areas. And I mean, you talk about machine learning and how advanced these things can get, where let's say you're removing some foreign object, right? A tumor, what have you, is if the AR is able to identify what is, you know, good tissue and what is bad tissue and help the doctor, you know, to remove that, it makes everyone's life better. It makes the doctor's life, you know, better because they can have, you know, more confidence in the surgery they're performing. It makes the patient's life better because it would most likely reduce the need for repeat surgeries and increase the rate of successful surgeries. It's just, it's a no-brainer. It's like I said, like, give that to me now, the sooner the better. This totally side tangent right now. Did you guys ever play that game on the Wii where you had to be a surgeon? Did you ever see that?
Oh, that was a hard game.
Yeah. So, Jim, I know you weren't there for our gaming episode, but I talked about like speedrunning, and there actually are speedruns for that game. So if you ever want to see some like really like shoddy, you know, surgery work in AR, just watch the speedruns for that surgery game on the Wii. It's hilarious to watch.
Okay. Mutilation of people on a video game because you're trying to save their life.
They survive. I mean, like, they survive, but just the stitching job they do is horrible. Like, come on, man. Like, take some pride in your work.
Come on, man. So, I mean, I think in the medical industry, I think that's a really cool idea, especially for kind of more invasive surgeries, you know, so like colonoscopies, I don't know what they call it for the esophagus or like intestinal stuff, but it'd be really cool if like you take that little pill that's also a camera and you get information in real time. So as that pill or that camera or whatever the case is picking up information as it's going, it'll leave like a tally mark on that part of your body that says this is what's wrong or this part's fine, and you're getting that in real time, so you're not waiting for the results to come back, because as that thing is going through, it's picking up the information as it goes, right? So I think that'd be a really cool integration to be able to say, this is where this problem is, here's the information as to why, and here's some other problems further throughout. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure how it ties into like the AR aspect of it, right? But as far as like a data gathering method, like we have these awesome ways to basically build and analyze data now, but seeing how that will go in the future, right? Like you said, it reminds me of The Island, right? That movie where he, you know, they inject the little nanobots into his like eye or whatever, and then they go through his body and like check everything, and then he has to pee them out painfully, like, haha, funny, thanks, Michael Bay. But yeah, kind of like that. But I think the AR aspect of it, right? Like seeing information maybe overlaid while they're doing, you said like the invasive surgery. So, okay, now it makes sense to me, right? So
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Absolutely.
It just finally clicked. I just had to go through the island analogy, like to actually like break it down. So I just had to filter it through Michael Bay, and then it makes everything seem simple.
Made it work. Lou, do you have any thoughts on medical use in AR?
I think you guys did a pretty good job of summing it up, and I really think that doctors in surgery is kind of the obvious use case here. The one use case that I don't know that we touched on much is more the like in the medical field in terms of like firefighters or EMTs, and I think this could be really useful for them in terms of like both navigation to a scene or an issue, as well as like vitals and stats coming in, you know, while they're hooking someone up. And so I think it has potential use cases in very like chaos-driven situations like that that are going to be pretty ripe for change as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, the firefighter scenario? I like how you brought that up, right? Let's say you send a team of firefighters in, right, into a house, and let's say you have a heads-up display or glasses or something where you can see where all of your team members are on a virtual map and where you are, right? And you're able to see and respond, and very much in, like, any, you know, multiplayer, like, first-person shooter game, right? Like, knowing where your teammates are on the map is a super important thing, and, like, setting waypoints and, like, finding ways to get there. And let's say you set a waypoint and it shows you, like, okay, well, based on the layout we have of this area, you need to go here, then take a right here, then take a left here. You know, there's tons of potential for use cases in AR, especially like in the medical field and in first responder fields.
Be cool if you could like actively map out the room. Like if you're the first person on the scene, that like if you have some kind of camera or whatever and it's literally mapping what you're looking at, so as other people come up to the scene, they already know the layout of what's happening. I think that'd be really cool. And I think that's already what you were saying.
Yeah, and you're starting to see that too, right? Like there are apps like called like Room Scan or Magic Scan, I think, that you can download even today, where basically you just point your camera around the room and it will basically take the dimensions and build, you know, a 3D model of whatever you've looked at, right? You take like medical equipment. There's medical equipment out there where they'll look inside like jet engines even. That's not medical, but there's uses in medical. But you'll look inside a jet engine and it will basically scan like infrared just tons and tons of times and map out like a 3D rendering of what you're looking at. So in terms of AR, let's say you had an infrared camera or some sensor on whatever thing you were wearing, like you said, Jim, could go in, look at a room, just look around the room, have that room mapped, and then walk to the next room, same thing. And then the other people behind you wearing the same glasses, all through like some real time, you know, feedback mechanism, would have that same data and be able to see everything. Like you talk about applications, like you start opening a lot of doors when you start putting something in front of people's faces with as little friction as possible to show them, you know, just more input.
And I think, you know, you brought something up, Adam, that, you know, mapping buildings would be really nice, but I think even just the give me, you know, brownie points here is just like, how nice would it be for, you know, firefighters to go into a structure fire and not even necessarily need to know what the building looks like inside, but what if they could just like, there's so much smoke that like, oh, my other buddy is, you know, 8 feet to my right. I just can't see anything that direction, but he's over there. So that I'm not, you know, one, spraying him with water. Two, you know, like I have an idea of where everybody is so that if someone's missing or something like that, I know where everybody is. And that seems like the gimme, the really easy place we could start with. And that hopefully in the next, you know, 5 years or less, that's like in, you know, on every rig that goes out into the field.
I mean, another thing that you can do too, and I'm sorry if we're getting too deep into this, but is you can do thermal imaging as well. So if there's a way that there are people who are stuck in that building, if you can thermal image the building and find where those heat signatures are, you can essentially figure out where the people are without being able to see anything. Like you can just, that thermal imaging or the infrared, we can just see through the smoke because it doesn't affect that light in any way. So if there's a person that you can't find in a building, thank goodness there's augmented reality because it just shows you where those heat signatures are and you just go grab that person.
Yeah. And I know we're hammering on the firefighter example stat too, but even like combating the fire, right? If you have a thermal camera overlay in front of you, you can see the hottest parts of the fire and kind of know how to control that fire. And, you know, this is something that people who go through, you know, firefighter academies and things like that, they learn all these ways to contain a fire. And the more information you have, the better you can control the outcome, or what the better you know how to utilize your tools to contain that fire. So I know we're drilling that home, but I think moral of the story is, right, like once you put something in front of someone's face that doesn't require them to look at something else, that they can still focus on the task at hand, friction fucking free, great.
It's really an incredible application to this technology. I mean, and we're really in kind of the beginning stages of it, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to do with education as well. So I mean, there's a ton of different ways that we can implement it, right? I mean, it allows kids and young adults to have tools that they wouldn't otherwise have access to because they're there virtually. You know, I mean, I feel like this would be really great for trade schools where it's like, you know, if you want to go learn to be a mechanic, you can essentially tear apart a carburetor or some kind of internal piece of something and look at all the inner workings of it. And you can look at all the pieces that put it all together and take it apart, put it back together and see how it all works and all that stuff all through your rectangle, which I think is really cool. I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, I know that Lou probably could have used it when he was going for his degree in aerospace engineering.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have definitely been useful, and I can only imagine, you know, so I don't have any kids. Adam has kids, but when my kids, you know, get there someday, you know, what this will look like for them is just going to be game changing.
It makes me want to go back to school, right? Like, I think a lot of people say that is the tools that we have now can make learning so much more engaging and so much more fun, right? You take something as simple as like a game of learning the 50 states, right? Or let's say it was a game where you had a computer screen, you had to click on a state, you know, for whatever. California comes up, you had to click on California, you know, New York comes up, you click on New York. Imagine if you had a map and you had, even today's standards, right? Like an iPad, and then you overlay that iPad on there and it said, you know, pick this state, and you tap on the state and then it fills in the state or does whatever, does a little dance and all the things to make it just more engaging, more fun. AR in that context can bring a lot to the education space. You talk about textbooks or calculators or just anything, like anything that you can put in front of their faces, and I say there as in kids, anything you can put in front of their faces to help them absorb more information is great.
Having that information already readily available for you is incredibly helpful. And I know I can definitely use that when I'm like doing homework, for example, where I can have my notes pulled up somewhere where I can just look at them and do my homework as I'm doing it. So I'm not having to switch between different pieces of paper or different websites or whatever the case may be. That information is just there.
Yeah, you look at the page on the test and your AR glasses just immediately bring up your notes based on the keywords in the subject of a text or the question that is asked. Right.
Don't let the teachers know what I plan to do.
Yeah. Right. Teachers don't know about AR yet. It's all good.
It's fine. It's fine. But yeah, I think education especially is going to be a very useful place in that. I mean, and what's really cool about that too is, you know, obviously there's been a lot of cuts to education and, you know, obviously they don't get the funding that they used to get before. So being able to use AR in ways where it's cost effective, where it's like, well, I don't have to have all these pieces of paper here. I don't have to print out all these assignments. Like it's just all in the technology that's already here. It's just a matter of getting the technology into their hands. And I feel like in the long run, that would actually really benefit in terms of cost.
Yeah, I mean, all of this technology is going to come down quite a lot. You know, I mean, we're going to, you know, at some point we will get to, you know, what Adam's ultimate fairy tale, you know, dream is, you know, this just spatially aware screens everywhere. And I really wouldn't be surprised that this stuff starts to come down so much that, you know, you'll go to your local store and just pick up a pair of, you know, contact lenses and, you know, that'll just be like the norm. And, you know, they may only last like 2 weeks, but guess what? They'll be like $10 at some point. So who cares? You know, it's going to get to a point where it's so pervasive that the cost won't be a factor at all.
You guys remember the Futurama episode with the iPhone that they released?
What do you think, Adam? Do you think I remember that episode?
Well, God, I'd hope so. But Jim, do you remember that episode, the iPhone?
I want to say yes.
So it was the iPhone, but it was the IEYE phone. So basically what they did is like they'd buy it and they shove it right in your eye, and then it would just project out a screen like in front of your eye, right? The whole spatial projection type thing, but still attached to you, right? So like, oh, everyone's going to go get the new iPhone, right? So everyone goes and gets the iPhone and like just shoves it in their eye, and then, you know, they have all these screens projected in front of them. Right, and then they get pop-up ads and all the other kind of funny things. But Futurama, man, for, you know, a show that was made in like early 2000s, I really like that show, and they kind of hit a lot of things, especially technology related, kind of on the head, especially when they're talking about, you know, 1,000 years into the future. So it just reminds me of that, where, you know, it will be commoditized to the point where, yeah, you just go to the tech store and buy this thing and they shove it in your eye, or you install this projector in your house and boom, like now you have everything there. But it'll be something that'll be in every house eventually. And you can see that because we mentioned at the beginning of the show, right? Like, people are already putting it in the hands of everybody, right? Anyone who has a modern, you know, smartphone has the potential to have AR in their hands right now. So it's only going to go down. It's only going to go into more appliances. And it's just finding how it's going to fit into all these marketplaces. And I think we've done like a pretty good job of summarizing all these different areas, right? Especially in professional settings, in driver settings, things like that. But one thing we haven't touched on yet is like the home, like the actual home, like something in, I think, Lou, did you put this in there for like real estate, I'm assuming? Yeah.
Yeah. I dropped these, a couple links in here.
Yeah. So the real estate's pretty interesting, right? Like you talk about right now, and I can give an example of this because, you know, it's no secret that, you know, we've been looking for a house to buy up here, or, you know, another house to rent, whatever it may be. And what we do is we use Apple TV and we go on, you know, the home shopping apps on there, and you actually look at homes, and you almost want to see like a full screen tour of this home. So having AR and being able to like either walk through a house, you know, with AR glasses on and see like, oh, this kitchen was remodeled in, you know, 2005, and it's got granite countertops and all these like little like heads up things that are popping up as you walk through a tour would, I think, be very interesting. And
yeah, so I think I'm most excited about the ability to do the like sort of thoughts of remodeling. That's the thing that is most interesting to me, because there's so many times that, you know, buyers go to buy a home and they have ideas of what they want to do with the home, and the home doesn't look the way they want it to look now, unless you're maybe building it or something like that from scratch, which, I mean, if you have that custom house money, have fun, you know, sky's the limit. But, you know, if you're buying something and you go, hey, you know, I'd really like to see what this looks like with a pool in the backyard, or I'd really like to get an idea of what this look like if we, you know, did our furniture in the house. And to be able to see all that would just be super, super cool. And I think it would get people to commit to buying. I mean, a house is no small thing to think about in terms of buying. It's a big, big decision. And so I think people would commit a lot faster and be, you know, much, much more okay with, you know, kind of an idea as long as they could see it. Because at the end of the day, we are visual creatures.
I think this sort of thing allows your imagination of how you want things to look to actually come to reality, because you have this idea in your mind of what you want your house to look like. And with AR, it gives you the ability to kind of turn it into this sort of half reality where it's like, I can actually physically see what this could look like. And I do like this and I don't like that. I'm not willing to compromise on this. And so, Lou, to your point, I think not only would it get people to commit faster, but I think it would get them to have a more comfortable feeling of commitment, because they're like, well, I kind of modeled it out on my phone and I really like the way that it came out. So I'm comfortable with my commitment and I'm happy with my decision.
So I even think of it in a different sense, because like right now you can download the IKEA app on an iOS device that supports ARKit, and you can actually put furniture in your home. You're like, hey, I want to buy something. And we all know going to IKEA and seeing their awesome showroom with all these like tiny, tiny spaces, you're like, yeah, this would totally work. And then you get home, and you're like, it's too small or it's too big, right? But being able to go and like actually preview what things will look like in your home, furniture wise, makes total sense. And Lou, you kind of touched on it, like walking through a house and like, well, what would this look like with my furniture? But even like buying new furniture, right? Like, all right, well, I need to get, you know, a couch for this space, or I need to get a new dining room table, right? And I know that my room is this big. Let's see what this dining room table would look like in this room, right? And being able to just put that on there and just have in a virtual or augmented space, right, this dining room table pop up, and you can move it, position it however you want to. You can switch different colors, different dining room sets, whatever it is. Being able to do that just makes a lot of sense from a consumer standpoint, because you're making, like you said, the buyer's remorse phase, there's virtually none because you can see and preview before you buy. And it makes the sell-through rate go through, right? Because people are more inclined to complete a purchase when they know it's going to work, right? Like I said, the moral of the story is taking all the friction out of everything. If you can take the friction out, then people are going to be more inclined to use whatever it is or buy whatever it is. So I think it's funny how the IKEA example makes a ton of sense, right? Because have you guys been in an IKEA showroom? I'm assuming you have.
Oh, yeah. It's delightful.
Right? Isn't it like, man, I could live off of 400 square feet. You know, this would be just great, right? But it's all open and you don't realize how tall the ceilings are. And then you don't realize that if you put ceilings and a wall on that, it's actually really claustrophobic. Very utilitarian, right? Like I would love to be able to live in, you know, a 400 square foot place, but with, you know, my wife and three kids, I think all of us would kind of go crazy doing that. But, I mean, it makes sense to be able to do that shopping and kind of have a better understanding of how these things will fit in your space.
I think it really saves a lot of headaches for the consumer.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about retail at all, but I think this is, you know, that checkbox for us in terms of the show, and it obviously is really big for retail. And you know, I think for somebody like IKEA, hopefully this cuts down on things like returns and so on and so forth, because people can, you know, fully see what something's going to look like before they commit to it.
You know, it's hard making that commitment to that, you know, $20 IKEA, you know, desk.
Well, if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit, and that's $20 that I could have used on something that does fit.
It's IKEA, you can hack it, you know.
Yeah, Adam, I don't just throw $20 at IKEA to, you know, solve a fire.
Well, I had no desk. What was I gonna do? Put milk cartons on top of, you know, each other to make a desk? If you don't have a desk, you need to buy a desk. Like, that's a problem you need to solve.
Isn't that like what all IKEA furniture is? Just milk cartons stacked together for $20?
For lack of a better term, most of the storage organization stuff is, yes. But sure, Lou, next time, instead of throwing money at it, I'll go to the dump and I'll reclaim a piece of wood or an old desk and I'll refurbish it just so I don't spend money on it, if that'll make you happy.
Sure.
Well, gentlemen, where does it all go from here? What is the future of augmented reality, which we kind of touched on earlier, but kind of a more solid idea and foundation of where we really think this is going to go and its future uses?
I already said my piece, so I'm saying the easy gimmies, like Lou says, or the low-hanging fruit, glasses in the next maybe 2 to 5 years, and then spatial AR fully implemented or kind of in an everywhere consumer sense in 10 years at least. That's my timeline, but that's where I see it going.
Yeah, I'm going to mostly agree with Adam here. I'm going to say glasses and cars with like heads-up displays in the next hopefully 5 years or less, that are looking more realistic than those like Google Glass. And then I'm going to say full-on spatial, I'm going to say more like 10 to 15, but 15 or less for sure.
So I think we talked a lot about a lot of good stuff. Like, I think this was a really solid conversation on AR. I think something that that the future is to bring with AR, I think this is going to open up technology for everybody. And what I mean by that is there are some people where poking at a glass rectangle is not how they have the ability to interact with their technology. Like, the only thing that they can use is their voice, or the only thing that they can use is gestures, right? And there are people who really utilize our accessibility options, you know, on all platforms. And I think AR is only going to make that easier for people to interact with technology and really make their lives easier and better. And I think that's going to be, a really cool part of AR going forward.
Unless you can't see.
Unless you can't see. That's a problem.
So I was thinking about the accessibility thing too, and I was like, oh yeah, it does bring up a lot of accessibility things. And I was thinking about this before you mentioned it. It was kind of funny. I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't mention that though, because it solves some of the problems, but it doesn't solve all of the problems, right? And in that in itself is an incomplete solution, right? There is no real form of AR for people who are blind or cannot see, right? Or have a hard time seeing. There's not really a great solution for that. And we have other technologies that are kind of, you know, filling those gaps. But if you want to think of like the one-stop solution, AR is not the answer. AR solves a lot of problems for a lot of specialized cases and eliminates a lot of friction in how we, you know, work day to day. And I think has the potential to do that, but it doesn't benefit everybody. Right. But I do agree with you, Jim, that it's going to be a better way for us to input methods or to input data or receive data from whatever source we need to. It's just going to be an easier way to facilitate that data transmission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's going to be a really great way for people to, you know, those with, you know, autism or, you know, whatever the case may be, it'd be a much better learning experience for them too. Right. At least I would imagine it would be.
Well, I agree. I think we talk about, we've always had like one way to do things, right? And we're always finding new ways to do things, and finding a new way to do things or a new way to do a certain task or a different way of approaching a problem always seems to benefit. You know, the more ways you have to skin a cat, the better, because there may be the person who only views a problem in a certain way or only can absorb information in a certain way. And being able to, like I said, facilitate that data transfer in the easiest way possible. Hey, hashtag friction fucking free, you know, that's the moral of the story, I guess. I don't know. I can't phrase it in a better way than the three Fs, but I don't want to say them anymore.
Triple F.
Friction fucking free. You know, it's like that Vin Diesel movie, Triple X, but Triple F.
Yeah, that's right.
F cubed.
Well, no, because that doesn't have the same ring to it. But you know, like, just think of the next, you know, Hollywood blockbuster or the next like big OS, you know, for AR is like, it's like, here's the magic AR Windows 97 triple F edition, friction fucking free.
any parting thoughts on the future of AR, or are we ready to wrap this episode up?
I think we did a pretty good job.
Any last mentions, Adam?
Friction fucking free. No, I'm good.
Awesome. So, Adam, you're in vacation mode, like shoes off and in pants vacation mode.
Yeah, man. I am disconnected from the world. Like, you guys are probably the last guys I will talk to on, you know, like phone call, Skype call, whatever. But I officially checked out for my vacation today, and it's been probably about a year since my last vacation. So it's been kind of like long overdue. So we're ready to pack up and go out. And yeah, like I said, my shoes are off right now. I will not tell you if my hand is in my pants or not, but I am lounging pretty hardcore right now, if that gives you any indication. But yeah, man, like, I'm totally in vacation mode. So I asked you guys how you were doing, and it was kind of self-serving for me, because I'm like, I'm doing fucking awesome.
I like how Jim totally read from the outline, like, word for word, and I don't think he read that line before, like, speaking it, and he was like, shoes off, hand in pants? Question?
Yeah, I put it in there because I was like, I don't think anyone's going to read this, and he started reading verbatim. I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
Here it comes. It's going
to
happen.
He got to the end of that line, and there was a little surprise for him.
You know, I don't read directly from it often, but I took a chance on this one, and boy, I'm not disappointed.
It's like you see the blue that knows that Adam edited it. It's like, okay, well, I just better read this verbatim otherwise. So it's like that Bruno Mars song, right? Gonna kick my feet up and stare at the... What does he say? Stare at the something? Something, something, something. Throw my hand in my pants. Nobody's gonna tell me I can't.
Something like that.
Come on, guys.
I don't know, man.
Dude, Lou, all I see from your music recommendations is the top pop radio. So you have to have hit Bruno Mars at some point in time. Like, as far as I can tell, you only listen to the pop radio.
I don't know, man. I just open up the music thing and then I just push whatever was last playing pretty much. So I think I just like started with that. I mean, you could probably convince me to listen to rap if it just was like, oh, that was the last thing that played. I guess we'll just play that then. So I don't open the music and play it enough. So it's really like whatever was last playing. If I'm playing music, it's not going to last more than like 10 minutes. Every once in a while I do open and play, what are those like self-generated playlists that Apple does for you?
Genius mixes.
Yes, yes, yes. Those.
Yeah. And it's all just pop music because that's all that you listen to.
I guess so. I mean, their algorithm is working somehow.
And obviously you refused to get sick on your vacation, Adam, so you got your flu shot.
Well, flu shot takes 2 weeks, you know, to be fully inoculated from whatever strain of flu that they're going after this year. But
it's the principle. It's fine.
Yeah, right? It's the I got my flu shot. I'm not getting sick.
You're damn right. Nothing's ruining my vacation.
I got my flu shot today. Have you guys gotten your flu shots?
I am well prepared. My flu shot was on November 3rd, so I think I'm at this point pretty much protected. I'm on day 13, right? So I should be good, and hopefully we'll go through another flu season without any major cold.
There you go. Jim, did you get your flu shot?
Can't say that I have.
Are you going to get your flu shot?
I am going to get my flu shot.
Didn't know if you'd be like, no, I'm not going to get a flu shot. I don't believe in flu shots.
Oh, no. Gosh, I'm not Jenny McCarthy. But yeah, I absolutely will be getting my flu shot. I'm at the end of my semester, so I have all these big final projects and finals that I have to get done. So my time has just been consumed with that.
Yeah, if anyone on the show should get the flu shot, it's you or I, because we've been sick for like weeks at a time.
I feel like I'm finally all the way 100% through it.
So now you can get the flu shot. Do you feel sick today? No, I don't. Yay!
Finally.
Well, you may experience some flu-like symptoms. Oh, no.
How sad.
Yep, everyone get their flu shots.
So, Adam, you were trolled. And did Lou notice?
Yeah, I trolled. Lou, did you notice?
No, I definitely did not. What did you troll me on?
Well, I definitely submitted some feedback.
Oh, then, yeah, no, I definitely did not notice that. So, sorry about that.
So this is the test of the emergency broadcast system. Fail.
It failed.
Yep. That was it. That was all I had. I trolled and I filled out the contact form. And apparently Lou doesn't read the comments.
So you filled out the when did you do this? I should ask.
Probably like Monday. So 4 days ago, 3 days ago.
I was gonna say because I'm pretty sure I looked at the email today, and I didn't see anything weird there. Yeah, I didn't see anything weird there. So maybe we've been receiving feedback and we just didn't know.
Well, that's not good, Lou. You got to fix that.
Yeah, we got to take a look at that. So I'll add that to my list to look at this week because I just logged in as you're telling me you trolled me and
the last email that is here is October 7th, which is not Monday.
That doesn't sound right at all. Okay, anyway.
So troll away. But yeah, I actually, you know what? I am incorrect in that. That is totally right. You did actually fill it out. I was actually logged into remember when we had an alternate email address? Yep, I was logged into that one.
Remember that time that Lou set up an email, you know, but we already had an email? Lou thought it'd be a good idea to use that email instead.
Hey man.
Oh, it's fine.
Sometimes you can't get into an email address, and then Adam just sits there for like an hour guessing the actual password.
Well, we don't talk about that part. We don't talk about Adam forgetting the one password for the vault and just sitting there guessing and looking at the hint saying like, wow, this was like a year ago. I don't remember what this is.
Oh, no.
But hey, good news. We're in now. So yeah, and Adam, the submission worked, but I was looking at the wrong address today, so that would explain why I didn't see anything.
Sigh.
Well, boys.
I thought you said you were going to get better at this. I thought you said we were going to get better at the sign-off. We're just sitting here awkwardly trying to, like, not sign off.
We're at the end.
All right, kids, I guess I'll see you in a couple weeks.
God, stop with the kids thing, man. Like, it just doesn't work.
Stop trying to make fetch happen.
Stop trying to make fetch happen, Gretchen. That is the ugliest effing skirt I have ever seen.
You go, Glen Coco. You go.
You go, Glen Coco. Wow, Shane looks hot today. He's like, that's your cousin. She's like, well, we're not really, because like, you have your cousins, then you have your first cousins, then you have your second cousins. Like, no, 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 sweetie.
No, that's not how that works. Yeah. Oh, gosh. She's a mess. And there were so many maps. Oh, and the great thing was, is you got them all at once. You didn't have to, like, pay for them after you bought them.
Yeah, you only unlock characters after beating the game on, like, the hardest setting.
Oh, shit. We're just going in a circle now. It's like coming full circle. I think we just need to start the podcast over again, guys.